So it's not been a problem. But anyway, he speaks a few times a year when I'm away, and we always enjoy, occasionally when I'm here, but we always enjoy his message. Brother Evan will come speak to us, and then after that I will follow with, we'll go right into the next session.
Good morning. I want to start this morning's first lesson with a show of hands. A question, a bit of an odd question, you might think, but I'll tie it in. Raise your hand if you've ever heard of a chimney cricket. Two people. It's not the bug. If you're thinking about a bug, it's something else. Okay, not many people. I didn't think many people. It also goes by the name. If you're maybe from California or elsewhere, they call it a hog valley. Or various other things, but it's basically the same thing. And I didn't know what a chimney cricket was until one day I was taking a nap in my office on the couch like I do every once in a while. And so there's a couch here, and then there's my desk with all my computer and fancy things there. And the roof, the ceiling right above my computer and my desk and all of that stuff was dripping. It was leaking. And the reason was the chimney cricket was failing. It's a thing on the roof. And so a chimney cricket is basically, if you imagine your chimney on a roof, and then your roof coming in like this. When it rains, the water comes down, and it would tend to settle right here near the chimney. So what a chimney cricket is they slope up part of the roof right near the chimney, so the water is supposed to run away from it and keep water from dripping down your chimney. Chimneys are pretty notorious for doing that. But mine wasn't working, and I had no idea what it was or what effect that a chimney cricket had on my life until something went wrong. Now you might think that's a bit of a strange place to start a lectureship on biblical foundations on my roof. But ask yourself this, just presuming that nobody here is a home inspector or building contractor or anything like that. When was the last time you gave any thought to the roof of your house? Or the foundation of your house, or apartment, or condo, or wherever you live. When any building that you go in, this building that you're in here right now, has a foundation. When was the last time you thought of it? If you're like me, it's been never until I started working on this. These are things that we just don't think about often. Why would we spend our time thinking about something that we can't even see? If it was something that was before us all the time, it would make sense. But if it's something that we can't even see and we don't even realize what effect it has on our lives, not to mention our lives having many other pressing matters to be tended to, why would we spend our time thinking about these kinds of things? We typically don't unless, like the chimney cricket, something is about to go wrong or something has already gone wrong. Here in Florida, what comes to mind with things going wrong, typically with foundations, it's not the roof leaking, but here in Florida, we think about sinkholes. It's been in the news a lot recently. A place in Tampa or somewhere else, a whole hotel, a whole 20-story building just getting eaten alive basically by the earth. So when our neighbor's house, when we find out perhaps our neighbor has a sinkhole, and then we see the stair step cracks in our walls and rooms that at one point used to be somewhat level start to tilt to one side, and the front yard or backyard, what used to be nice flat lawn, is now starting to sink ever so slightly. What at one point might have been a very rare thought, if ever, sinkholes, would very likely be something that you think about more and more every day. And it would be something probably at the very forefront of your mind. What if I'm next? How much is this going to cost to fix? What if I can't get homeowners insurance? Will I have to move? What if I'm sleeping one day and like the guy I heard about on the news, I wake up and I'm dead because I've been swallowed by a sinkhole? There's a lot of things that could happen, and sinkholes and foundations and all these things that we can't see and rarely ever think about would be at the forefront of our mind. In that situation, what kind of soil our house stands on would be something we think about a lot. But excluding that, we probably don't think about foundations again. because it's something we can't see. There's a reason for the old saying, out of sight, out of mind, because we spend enough time worrying about our jobs and school and our kids and wives and husbands and all the bills and things that we have to deal with throughout our day-to-day lives, we typically don't have time to sit and ponder about the unseen things. We mow the grass. Why? Because it gets tall, we can see it getting tall. If the grass was growing on the ground or something, you know, we don't worry about it. We don't worry about mowing the roots because the roots are on the ground. That's not something we can see. We fix the leaky faucet because it drips all day long, and when you turn it on, it sprays you. That's something we can see. We fix the air conditioner because it's hot in here and we're sweating through our shirts. That's something we can maybe not see, but we can feel it. So these are all things that we fix. On and on we can go because we notice them. We don't worry much about sinkholes or termites or rusty pipes or a septic tank that's about to get backed up or a crumbling foundation. Again, because we can't see them. We don't even know enough about many of these things a lot of times to even begin to be concerned about them. These things tend to go on without much thought. But here's the point. Just because we don't often think about these things doesn't mean we shouldn't. Just because we don't often think about these unseen things doesn't mean we shouldn't think about these unseen things. If we spend a little bit of time thinking about and maintaining these unseen things, we could avoid a whole lot of trouble down the road for ourselves. So what's the application then for this lectureship? We first need to realize that God is the origin of all of our foundations. God indeed is the origin of all our foundations. We can't see Him, but like many things that are vitally important to us, we should think about Him more. We should carefully consider what would happen if we invested a little bit of time improving and maintaining our relationship with Him, growing closer to Him in knowledge and love and appreciation and all these various areas that God commands us to do to grow closer to Him. Our lives would surely be very much enriched by it. On the other hand, if we should also consider what would happen if we stopped thinking about Him as we should, if we forgot Him like I sometimes forget to change the oil in my car. I get dirty looks from mechanics. Our knowledge of Him would get rusty, our love for Him would fade and crack. Our neglect would cause a once sacred and vitally important relationship to break down, and ultimately there might be catastrophe. If you forget to change the oil in your car for long enough, it's not going to be a car anymore, it's going to be a paperweight that you have to get towed away. Catastrophe, not only financially, for the physical things, but spiritually when we're speaking about God, and not only for ourselves, but those whom we love as well. Let's turn quickly to Psalm chapter 33. Psalm chapter 33, we'll begin at verse 4. Psalm 33 and verse 4. For the word of the Lord is right, and all His work is done in truth. He loves righteousness and justice. The earth is full of the goodness of the Lord. By the word of the Lord the heavens were made, and all the host of them by the breath of His mouth. He gathers the waters of the sea together as a heap. He lays up the deep in storehouses. Let all the earth fear the Lord. Let all the inhabitants of the world stand in awe of Him. For He spoke, and it was done. He commanded, and it stood fast. Yes, God is indeed the origin of all of our foundations. Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, we find it at the very outset of the Bible. In the beginning, God. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. He's the very source of all that exists. The Bible is clear that God is the source of all life and all matter. In John chapter 1, verse 1 as well, and verses following, we read, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through Him, and without Him, nothing was made that was made. There's an old joke that I'm sure maybe half of us have heard already, but it's about some scientists who finally figured out how to make life from non-life. And they were pretty excited about it. They're very happy, but they were kind of sad, on the other hand, to have to break this to God. So they pick one of the scientists to go to God and sort of say, well, you know, God, we figured out how to create life from non-life, so Sorry to say that we don't really need you anymore. Thanks, it's been great. And that's basically how it went. So God was interested by this. And he replied, okay, you say you can make life from non-life. Let's see it. Now, the scientists were, of course, all too happy to show God their fancy new experiment. So what they did, you know, one scientist bent down and took a little scoop of dirt. And God says, whoa, what are you doing? The scientists, they are confused. They say, well, you asked us to show you how we create life from non-life. And the first thing we do is we get this scoop of dirt. And then God says, no, you get your own dirt. You see, if we're to build anything, whether we're scientists or, you know, just regular people, we need the stuff with which to build it. And even that is ultimately from God. You see, we cannot even begin to do anything if it was not for God who began it all for us. We know the Bible is unmistakable that God is the origin of all of our foundations. However, this does presume that God exists and the Bible is His Word, and it's certainly beyond the scope of this lesson and this lectureship as a whole to address that issue in detail, but suffice it to say, our evolutionist friends, they cannot adequately explain our origins by purely materialistic means. Any explanation that they offer relies on the blind leap of faith which they mistakenly apply to us. No Big Bang or blind chance could have created the order and complexity we freely observe around us. God gave us not only our physical environments, but he also gave us our mental faculties. We read a lot about this in Romans chapter 1. And with these mental faculties, he expects us to take in evidence and reason properly from it. And God describes us as being without excuse if we reject him and disbelieve his existence. Truly, God is the origin of the universe, the beginning of beginnings, and he didn't need a single one of us to make any of this happen. The book of Job vividly illustrates this point. In the book of Job, we find Job, he was a righteous man and a very wealthy man, and he's very blessed, but we find him robbed, and his family is killed, and his health is taken away from him, and he finds himself in a very pitiful situation. His wife is still alive, but that ends up being more of a curse than anything else. But we find in chapter 38... previous to chapter 38, actually, Job and his quote-unquote friends are reasoning and questioning why all this stuff is happening. They're trying to figure it out. And finally, in chapter 38, we find God answering Job. Chapter 38 and verse 1. Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, "Who is this who darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Now prepare yourself like a man. I will question you, and you shall answer me. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me, if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? To what were its foundations fastened? Or who laid its cornerstone? When the morning stars sang together, and all the sons of God shouted for joy." And God continues to ask a number of extremely difficult questions. But God is essentially saying here, Job, I didn't need you or your friends to create this universe. You weren't there. You have no idea how I did any of this, do you? God is vividly reminding us here that it is we who need him and not the other way around. Sometimes we tend to get it mixed up. You know, God should be so thankful for us because we come to church and we worship and we do all these good things. And, you know, God, he really needs me. No, that's not the case at all. We are the ones who need God, and we should never forget that. Let's break this passage down, though, a little bit further. Verse 1, "Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind." When God wanted to send a very powerful message, he did that. He certainly could. Out of a whirlwind is sometimes how this is described, the manner, that is, in which he did this. The use of a whirlwind indicates that all of this likely came about very suddenly. The Lord's appearing in this manner typically was accompanied by great earthquakes. And I don't know if anybody here has ever been in an earthquake. I used to live in Alaska, and I remember one earthquake in particular, and it is very terrifying. You know, it's one thing when things around you are moving, like, you know, a building or something, but if the ground under your feet starts to quake and move uncontrollably, there's something unsettling about that. You know, when we don't want something to move, we bolt it into the ground, right? When the thing that we bolt things to not move, starts to move, it's scary. And if you've never experienced an earthquake, you know, you just have to use your imagination. And not only earthquakes, but flashes of lightning and thunder. And if you've ever had a bolt of lightning land anywhere near you, it'd make you jump out of your skin. Lightning and thunder and fire and great noise. When the Israelites saw this type of spectacle, they trembled and they didn't get anywhere near it. They stood afar off. They even thought that they might die. The very terrible sight that this must have been for Job and his friends, if his friends were still there. And it very certainly would have put them in their place. Verse 2, who is this who darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Other commentaries roughly interpret this as, why are you using your ignorance to deny my providence? Who is this that questions my wisdom with such ignorant words? Why do you confuse the issue? Why do you talk without knowing what you're talking about? God is pointing out that some charlatans here have been drawing conclusions and giving advice without exactly knowing what they're talking about. Verse 3, now prepare yourself like a man. I will question you and you shall answer me. God is basically saying get ready because here it comes. Prepare yourself like a man or gird up now thy loins is a term often used in reference to a man preparing for war. A great obstacle is coming and God wants Job to face what is coming at him head on. Get ready. Verse 3. Actually, also in regard to the questioning, this is something that Jesus did as well. In the New Testament, we read of Jesus being asked questions. What would he do a lot of times? He would say, I will answer your questions if you first answer one of mine. You know, of course, Job could not answer God even if he wanted to. God here is making a point. Verse 4, where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Now, of course, we know that the earth isn't, like this building, set on anything physical. The foundations of the earth likely refer to the various laws of physics and space and time and all of these things that are necessary for the earth to exist. God laid all of these foundations, and God is asking Job, how much do you know about all of that stuff, Job? Probably not very much. Tell me, Job, how I spoke the worlds into existence. Can you do that? Verses 5 and 6, who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? To what were its foundations fastened? Or who laid its cornerstone? These words are essentially, it's like a contractor talking to an architect. These are very architectural building type of phrases and words. This is like God is explaining his blueprints. But these are somewhat rhetorical questions. God is putting Job in his place and reminding him how little Job really knows. Job didn't know how God placed the earth 93 million miles away from the sun and at a 23.4 degree tilt, suspended upon nothing, held in place by various gravitational forces, all of which are extremely precise measurements without which life could not exist. These measurements and concepts were completely foreign to him, and the very questions were likely mind-boggling. As wise and as righteous and great as Job was, he was in absolutely no position to even begin to ponder these kinds of things, much less answer God. And verse 7 is my favorite. Verse 7, when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy. Now with the naked eye, and back then, we can see at most a few hundred or a few thousand stars. And from our vantage point, they look like just tiny dots in the sky. They're beautiful, yes, on a clear night, we can see a lot of them. But not particularly impressive. Not like a large skyscraper or something like that is impressive. But we now know that even an average-sized star, such as our sun, is so massive to be nearly beyond comprehension. Just an average or relatively small-sized star is so humongous that we have to use other words to describe it. You know, a bus is huge, or a building is huge. But something that is many, 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 many times larger than that. We just, you know, we can sort of describe it with various illustrations and things like that, but it's hard to really understand how massive even a small one is. In addition, it produces, our star, so much energy in one single second that we could power everything in the world for 500,000 years. One single second of energy produced by our small sun produces something like 400 trillion watts of energy. And I have no idea what all of that means. I can't understand. But that's 1 second of one star producing so much energy, so much power, that we get this confused look on our face when we try to think about these kinds of things. That's all we can say. Wow. We can't even imagine and comprehend the power emanating from such a thing for a single second, much less the power of the God that created it and countless stars just like it. In 1996, I found a very interesting story. Astronomers pointed the Hubble Space Telescope at an empty, what they thought was a completely blank portion of the sky. And they focused on a tiny area. And imagine holding a grain of sand. If we go out in the parking lot and you find a grain of sand, a regular grain of sand, and you hold it out at arm's length and look at it, that's about the size of the portion of sky that they were looking at. And they focused the Hubble Space Telescope on that portion of the sky for about 10 days. You know, and at the time it was thought to be a great risk because, you know, looking time on the Space telescope was very valuable. So people thought, you know, they're just wasting their time. There's nothing there. But what they found was not only stars, not only thousands of stars, but thousands of galaxies, each one of which contains hundreds of billions of stars. An empty portion of our sky, about the size of a grain of sand, held out at arm's length, containing thousands of galaxies, each one of which containing hundreds of billions of stars. And we can't even comprehend a portion of one of those things for 1 second. If Job only knew, if we only knew the power of God, it would only be natural for his creation to shout for joy and in praise of him. What an awesome and powerful God we serve. Even evolutionists who described the image came back and said that is profound and humbling. And the best part, in my opinion, is if we look at Genesis chapter 1, how God describes how much effort he expended creating all of this. Genesis chapter 1 and verse 16, he made the stars also. If it were me, I'd belabor the point. I'd kind of brag about it a little bit. Look at all this cool stuff. And God made it knowing that for thousands of years, people would have no idea it even existed. He made the stars too. Psalm chapter 19 and verse 1. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork. What an awesome and humbling experience this must have been for Job. And this is only the beginning of the questions that God starts to ask him. Even with how much we know now or ever could possibly know about the universe, we could still just as easily be humbled by our God with similar questions. He created us and he didn't need to stop and ask us for our input before he did any of it. Colossians 1:16, for by him all things were created that are in heaven and that are on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or principalities or powers. All things were created through him and for him. And he is before all things, and in him all things consist. Again, the Bible reminds us that everything was not only created by God, but also for God. In addition, he's existed before all things, both in terms of time as well as preeminence. And he holds everything together by his own power. Apart from him, nothing could exist. Now, that's not to say that how everything is now is as God would ideally have it. God pronounced in the beginning, at the end of Genesis chapter 1, his creation was very good. But it didn't take long for the free will of man and sin to enter and taint his perfect creation. We must remember that we should ascribe the good in this world to God and all the rest to the devil and his influence. James chapter 1 and verse 17 and 18. Do not be deceived, my beloved brethren. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and comes down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow of turning. Of his own will he brought us forth by the word of his truth, that we might be a kind of first fruits of his creatures. Now at this point, hopefully, we've established that God is the originator of all that exists. He is our foundation, the source of all foundations. But the next question has to be, since we know this, what's next? Since we know this, so what? If it is the case that God created us and he is the origin of all foundations, then what? Then we can be assured that all of the things that rest on God as its foundation, our own souls, our families, the church, our future, and other things, those things are steadfast as well. If the foundation is steadfast and will not move, the things that rest on it are steadfast and will not move. As long as we stand firm on God, we cannot be shaken or moved. Romans chapter 8, verse 38, "For I am persuaded that neither death nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor powers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor height, nor depth, nor any other created thing shall be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus our Lord." We know it is impossible for God to lie. Titus 1, verse 2. He does not vary or change, as we just noticed in James chapter 1. And just as the wise man in Matthew chapter 7, who decided against building his house on the shifting sands of worldliness, but rather built it on the rock of Jesus Christ, we can have confidence that we will not fall. That is, as long as we remain on the solid foundation, as long as we stay true to God. If the wise man in Matthew chapter 7 picked up and moved his house, say as a mobile home, he moved his house over to the mud or the sand, well, what would happen? It would fall. So if God is the origin of our foundations, we ought to remember him, even though, like we previously noticed, he may be out of sight. He is. He's out of sight, but that doesn't mean he's not important. It's easy to forget about the things in life that aren't constantly before our eyes. But remember, neglecting God will have just as real consequences as neglecting any other item or relationship in our lives. Read the end of Romans chapter 1 and see what kind of things happen to people who forget God. How long do you think a normal marriage would last if the husband and wife only spoke to each other or interacted or spent time together for 2 or 3 weeks, 2 or 3 hours out of every week? If we're smart enough to realize that this isn't enough time to develop a relationship with anyone else, how could we expect that 1 or 2 or 3 hours every week would be enough to develop a meaningful relationship with our God in heaven? If husband and wife only spent a few hours every week together or maintaining their relationship, how long do you think it would take before their eyes started wandering elsewhere? Or with your car or house, how we find out just a little bit of maintenance goes a long way to preventing a very large bill or a very large catastrophe down the road. You know, a little bit of work patching my roof cricket saved me a lot of money, I'm sure, in bulldozing my house that became a mold bomb. Right? Just a little bit of work preventing and maintaining things can do a lot to prevent a major and expensive catastrophe. Maintaining a relationship with God, on the other hand, will provide innumerable blessings in our lives today as well as in the life that is to come. And it will help us avoid many pitfalls that are all too common in this day. We will wrap up with Psalm chapter 18. Psalm chapter 18. Read together with me, if you will. We'll start in verse 1. Psalm chapter 18 and verse 1. I will love you, O Lord, my strength. The Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer, my God, my strength in whom I will trust, my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold. I will call upon the Lord, who is worthy to be praised. So shall I be saved from my enemies. God is our rock. God is our stronghold. God is our strength. He is our foundation, and indeed the origin of all foundations.